Welcome to The Consult Room, the podcast that celebrates pets and people. I'm Dr. Paul Mangtalo. I'm a veterinary surgeon with a passion for the rich insights and stories about pets in the modern world that we live. Whether you're a pet owner, a pet professional, or you just love hearing about pets, then this is the space for you. For many of us, myself included, pets are like children to us. We have a unique and special bond with them, and they have a huge impact on our lives. But what about when it comes to the end of their life? Owners are often faced with the incredibly difficult decision of ending that pet's life. And for some, the intense emotion around losing a pet is almost too much to bear. Today's guest is Diane James, who heads up the Pet Bereavement Support Service at Blue Cross, leading a team of volunteers who help over 28,000 pet owners a year, who contact them for support through their grief. As a UK expert on pet bereavement, Di also trains and presents to animal charities, veterinary and educational teams, as well as speaking on TV, radio, and of course, on podcasts. But Di, welcome to the consult room. Tell me a little bit about the Pet Bereavement Support Service at Blue Cross.
It's an absolutely fantastic service. We started in 1994, which is 28 years ago. In those days, it used to be the old telephone on the end of a wire, and it was more like a befriender service. Then about 2012, we went on to a virtual call centre because it's a service that's entirely run by volunteers, and they are fantastic volunteers. We now have a phenomenal amount. We have 227 volunteers that are based all around the UK because we've actually introduced new services. And whilst we're on a virtual call centre, we have web chat, we have email, and we have Facebook. The service is free, open every day of the year, from 8:30 to 8:30, and we're there to support. And it's really important people know that we're not counsellors, that they're there to support, listen, and signpost people for any type of loss. Because I have to tell you, we all think of death as bereavement, but it's absolutely any type of loss, from theft to lost to a need to rehome for any reason, we're there.
That's really interesting. So I was going to ask that as my next question. What kind of support do you offer bereaved owners? Because immediately I went to a pet that's been lost through death, but you mentioned some other scenarios there. So could you just expand on those?
We can. What we do is often a lot of people, if a pet's died, they find it very difficult to talk to people who are close to them or connected to that pet. So obviously we're there to support and listen. But if you've had a pet that, say, for example, been lost or stolen, there's no closure if the animal doesn't come back. So often it can be worse than an actual loss by death of a pet because you never know what happened. So again, we're there to support, listen, signpost and give people sort of information as to where they maybe could look for the pet, who they could contact, make posters and other things they may not have thought of.
So this service has been going for 28 years now. Now, I remember when I was a new graduate and I've started my job, I'm not going to tell you how long ago, it was many, many moons ago. But I remember referring clients to your support service many years ago as a new graduate. So how has the service developed and changed over those years?
Gosh, you know, first of all, I have to tell you, you look very young for your age. But I also need to say that what we did was a number of years ago decided that there were certain elements that we needed to move on technology wise. So obviously the phone's always been a big element. People use mobiles, etc. But they then moved on to email. So email transcends the world. So not only do we get them from the UK, but we get emails from South America, Canada, Australia. Mainly they come from the UK, but they come from absolutely anywhere in the world. During the pandemic, my daughter's a student at uni, and like most young people, she doesn't communicate by email or telephone. She uses her thumbs. So the one day she's lying in bed, texts me what's for breakfast, and I suddenly thought, I need a new demographic, younger people, web chat. So we evolved then, and we brought web chat into the marketplace for people who needed our service. Another one that we've recently in the last year as well we bought on was Facebook. I wasn't always a lover of it because I sometimes worried when you have an emotive subject like we deal with, how would it work? But we brought Facebook into the picture, started it a year ago. It's a closed site, fantastic people who are all on there, all in the thing you have in common, sadly, is the loss of their pet and any type of pet. And as of today, we're 12,300 followers in that year.
That's brilliant. That's amazing. So As we sit here today, we are facing into a cost of living crisis. Now, I read an article that said there was a huge rise in calls for your service during the pandemic. So are you expecting a similar increase in demand for your service as people face into financial hardship?
We are, and we're already starting to see it. I'll explain the pandemic one slightly in the fact that we were privileged to not have to shut at any point. We opened every single day throughout the pandemic, whether it be for users of the service or for training. And we made a decision at that point, because so many other services were unable to do it, that we would take any call if it related to pet loss, but it linked into any need. So it could have been loneliness, mental health. So we dealt with things that we previously probably wouldn't have received. Now, in the environment we're sadly living in today, we're starting to experience calls that we've never had before, where people are unable to pay for treatment for animals. They're leaving them so that if they can't afford the out-of-hours treatment, they will wait a weekend. So sadly, the animal has to wait all weekend to go to the vets. They're struggling to feed the pet. And the saddest of all, which really makes my heart ache, is they can't afford to solely cremate the pet. So if they have to, they'll have it communally cremated and not get the ashes back. Or they're having to go and bury them in forests and areas where they can for free. And that really is sad.
This may seem like a really odd question, but why do people call the service? Now, you've talked about the scenarios, all the different situations that people might be in. But what is it that drives somebody to pick up the phone and say, that's who I need to call? What drives them?
Do you know, every single one of us is unique, and lots of people say they'll never use a helpline. And I think it's only when they experience a loss of something that they can't quite understand, or they don't feel that other people understand, that they ring us or they write to us. Because there's one big area, and the common term is known as disenfranchised grief, where people don't understand the effect that a pet's loss will have on the person that's loved it and owned it and been there. And I think what drives them to us is the fact that we're all like-minded people, all loved and lost, and it's non-judgmental, totally impartial and confidential. And I think that in itself is really unique.
So when somebody contacts you, talk me through the experience they'll have. Like, what happens?
Well, each way of contacting us will be slightly different. When they pick the phone up, they may not ever get the same volunteer, because what we try to do is stop it from becoming a dependency. So while some people like to have the same person, it's better for them and for the people who are at the other end of the line that they have a different relationship. They will get a person when they call us who is empathetic, totally understands, and as I said, non-judgmental. If they need signposting, they'll be signposted. If they need to just cry and be heard, they'll be there for that, or we'll just listen and support. And sadly, I have to say, and it is really sad as well, we do get a number of really vulnerable callers, sometimes at the lowest ebb of their lives. And the fact that we can be there to support them and help them through is just something that I just can't describe to you.
It's really interesting when you're saying that, because obviously we've positioned this service and obviously it is for pets, but actually all the emotions and experiences that you're talking about could be related to the loss of anything, couldn't they? And do you often find that the pet loss might be at the forefront of why somebody calls you, but there's lots of other reasons in the background of why they've reached that point where they need help?
You know, often there are, and the loss of the pet can trigger those. If I start to get a bit more academic, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross grief cycle. The loss of a human being, and I always hark back, 1969, so whoa, that's old. However, the emotions that a person losing a pet almost transcend and are in sync with those. However, there are some differences, and they are unique to a pet's loss. And within Blue Cross in 2020, we devised the pet grief cycle, because the differences that can be found when you lose a pet needed to be recognised. Anticipatory grief, also the huge amount of guilt that's experienced. However, as I'm digressing, as always, they are interlinked then. So, for example, if I suffered a loss, it can trigger the loss that I shared the pet with that person. So, for example, if I had a partner who sadly passed away, we shared a pet, and then my dog dies, not only do I suffer the loss of the dog, but suffer the loss of the memories of the partner that I had with that dog. So it's what we call a term called echo grief, where it brings back the losses. It's, you know, and it, then not only could it be the loss that I experienced there, it can be other losses like hardship, the environment I live in, my well-being. They all interlink.
There's some really great phrases in there. Echo grief is something that I have experienced from clients in a consult room when you put their pet to sleep, when they talk about their partner and the relationship with that animal and their partner who's passed. But I wanted to really pick up on the first phrase used, which was anticipatory grief. Now, is that the grief that starts before the loss of a pet? Because I have, again, some very recent experience of this with a very good friend of mine that was really struggling to make the decision to put their dog to sleep. And this dog was essentially their child. They really, really, really were struggling with it. And what I recognized were actually they were in the process of grief already while that dog was still alive. So could you just explain that to me?
You hit it on the nail, hit it on the head, should I say, then, but it's not a very good term to use. What I would say is when somebody gets given a diagnosis, and it might not be terminal, it can be treatable through medication or operation, they often go into what we call anticipatory grief. And the name itself is a dead giveaway, which is a bad pun to use. But it is the person already starts to grieve that loss. And they're almost thinking about all the things that are going to come rather than enjoying what the time they have left or what they can do in that time. So it's quite understandable. And what we often advise people to do when they're going through that is, if you know that sadly that it's going to be terminal or that it may not have long to live, is to do what we call a bucket list, just as we would for a human. Enjoy the time that you have. And it is difficult, I know that, but it's important to make good memories and make those last days, however long they are, as best as they can be.
I think that's such a brilliant idea. And you often see that. But, do you know, you often see that with people, don't you, who have been diagnosed with terminal conditions who are quite young. And that's the usual context of it, isn't it? All the things I want to achieve. But I really like the idea of doing that for any pet or any person, because I think even older pets do have things that they love doing, don't they? And they do have experiences that they really want to enjoy. So I love that bucket list. I think that's a great idea.
Do you know, Paul, I've actually got one for one of my dogs, Chester, because he's 12. And he's outlived his brothers and sisters by twice their life. And I have a bucket list, or my daughter does. And it's things like, gosh, I shouldn't be saying this. He has a McDonald's beef burger without the bun, because that's on his list. He won't come back, he won't recall, so we've had to hire a field with a lot of fencing around it to let him run for his life, and that's on his list. And we are making memories, because we just don't know when it'll go and when it'll happen.
Oh, that's really lovely. It does remind me a little bit, though, a couple of years ago when I lost my dog Dolly, I was doing this subconsciously. I didn't actually have a physical list, but I knew what I wanted her last few days to be like. And so I was quite resolute that she wasn't able to walk very well in the back leg. She had a tumour in her spine. But I wanted to take her to the park and let her, you know, kind of chase squirrels. And I wanted to have a really big, you know, food meal of whatever she wanted. And I wanted to allow her to, she wasn't allowed on the sofa, but on this day she was allowed, you know, to sleep. And you know what? She had the best last day ever. And it was lovely, even though it was a really sad time. That bucket list of knowing those experiences up to the end have been positive, I think it's really reassuring. It was for me anyway. So put some more things on that list, Di. Add that bun to that burger is what I'm going to say. This episode is sponsored by Superdog from Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. As a vet, I would always encourage a healthy, balanced diet for your dog. But like us, all dogs are different. So giving a vitamin supplement can act as an insurance policy to make sure you're meeting your dog's nutritional needs. Superdog's chewable, tasty braised beef tablets are packed with over 21 nutrients, expertly formulated for your special companion, including linseed oil to help maintain a glossy coat, greenlip muscle to maintain joint health, and zinc and selenium to provide immune support. In a recent study, Superdog was recommended by 96% of dog owners. Dogs absolutely love them. I've personally seen improvements in many, many dogs whose owners have given Superdog vitamins for just a few weeks. Superdog is available now at Amazon, Ocado, Paws, superdrug and vitabiotics.com. Our viewers love to hear stories and case studies and, you know, people that have had real life experiences with your service. Do you have any that you could share with us?
I do. I have some sad, some happy. But I would say one that really resonates with me is Echo Grief of a Caller. Strangely enough, it segues well in there. A gentleman called the line. And he was at the lowest ebb of his life, sadly. It was during COVID. He lived on his own. He had no family. And his wife had died a couple of years back. And he was living just with their pet terrier. And sadly, a few days before he rang us, the dog had been put to sleep. And he was really struggling because not only had he lost his wife and now he'd lost the pet, but he was very lonely because there was nobody there. And we spoke and he told me that he was at such a low ebb in life, he decided he didn't want to be here anymore. And you never want to hear that. And we talked and he actually told me he was a retired serviceman. And we had a really good conversation about all the things he'd achieved in his life, his wife, the dog. And after a long, long time of talking, he decided that he did have a lot to offer. But the most important thing was, is that we got him support. We talked to him and it's not a thing where it's self-praise for us, but it just makes you realise that just talking to us and contacting us got him back from a place you'd never want anyone to be. And I do know that he has now rescued another dog. He is happily living in the area that he lives in and he's been supported through it. So it's a nice ending to a sad story.
Oh, that's a lovely story. Can we have another one?
Of course you can. Another one, for example, we have is we had a lady who rang us because a number of her pets had died over quite a short time. They were all of a similar age, all similar breed of dog. And she just really didn't know quite how to cope. She was struggling and she was ringing us a lot most days, every day, chatting to us, different volunteers about what she was going through. And we're there for that. And we understand that everybody experiences things in different ways. She lived in quite a remote part of the UK. So there wasn't really anybody around, but the telephone was a lifeline. And over a while, she called us and then they started to get less. The calls went down to weekly and then they were monthly. And she was starting to feel a lot better about herself and understanding and accepting the loss, because I don't think we ever get over a loss. But the reason for it being a good call for us is this lady now volunteers for us. And she'll tell you herself that the reason she's here is to give back, because of all she got from Blue Cross and the Pet Bereavement, it made her realise that, yes, there was hope, there was a way to go forward. And she actually, you know, really, really, gosh, the amount of hours she puts in for us, and she loves it. And she's a fantastic volunteer now.
There's definitely, in my mind, been a bit of a shift in society in how we view and we treat pets. And I'm going back, you know, a couple of generations from when, you know, my grandparents had pets. But with that in mind, do you think we need to do something different within society when it comes to grief? Because, you know, nowadays pets are more like family members, aren't they? And yet I'm not sure we've got the right structures in, you know, the workplace, you know, in terms of compassionate leave and in many organizations, or, you know, the recognition of how difficult that can be when some people, like the examples you've used, we're talking about family members. Do you think we need to do something different in society?
Do you know, I have to say, in the last few years, we have definitely moved on for the better. People are more understanding, but it's only because we're telling and emphasizing to people the need to understand that the loss of a pet can be a huge loss to the person. In the environment that I work in, we can take our pets to work. We do get bereavement leave, as in compassionate leave of a day when our pet dies. And we're also actually, I'm part of a pet loss network, which is people from all over the world. And our latest campaign is for people to understand the need for compassionate leave when a pet dies, because the effect can be different on every single one of us. But I do think we've moved on. I think as a nation, the UK is fantastic as animal lovers. I see it in different parts of the world in different ways, but I think in this country we are definitely, you know, moving on. We have got some way to go, and I definitely think that people do need to realize the impact of pet ownership, what it brings us, as much joy and love as it does to them, and health as well, in our health.
brilliant. And that work that you're doing with is it the Pet Loss Network? I think that sounds fantastic. What sort of things are you doing with them?
Well, it's a real like-minded group of people from all over the world. We have from Canada, America, Europe, and this country. Majority are academics. And what we're doing is we're looking at ways we can improve areas within pet loss. So not only, for example, can it be compassionate leave, it can be, we've held workshops, for example, on the way that people around the world cremate or after death body care. And I know this is not an exciting topic, but, how it's dealt with differently in different parts of the world, how we can improve it, how we work together as a group, how it's improved within history. And they are a really good set of people that we're looking at ways that we can improve afterlife.
Obviously, my experience comes from the veterinary profession, and I don't think as vets that we can manage grief in clients very well. And often we are only involved in that process at the point of euthanasia, because that's the point at which the client comes into our consult room. And over the years, it's been a part of the job that I've, really kind of struggled with, just because the lack of time and the lack of resources. And that's why I've been involved in a kind of a home euthanasia service, where you can actually go to somebody's house, you can do it in the, the peace and calm and familiar surroundings of the home, and really take that time. And I feel that often does help the owners, come to terms a little bit more with the process. But in the veterinary practice, which is the main, area that this service is still done, what more can be done? How are you supporting veterinary practices in that area? Because it is an area that's really difficult to get that balance right.
Do you know, you're so right. And I think it starts from the basics of when a vet trains. I definitely think that the academic world could look at, and it has got better, I have to say, showing people what they will encounter, because we join things to make things better and for things to become well, not for them to sadly die. So it's often not part of the training, is how to deal with the client, how to work at the end of life, how you may feel. So I think, first of all, the basics need to be put in place, which are getting there. And then what we do as well as an organisation, we offer training. We do e-learning and we do webinars. We go along and we'll talk to universities or practices or organisations about pet bereavement, how to handle clients and emotion and what grief is. But also we go along and we'll look at the environment they work in. We've gone in with purpose-built practices and we've, for example, helped them set up rooms so that people can go in there and they'll have a quiet room so that they can go through the loss and be talked to and spend their last moments with their pet before it's actually put to sleep. And as also what we've done as a service and we've just launched is I'm what I always call our get out of jail card. Vets are busy, veterinary practices are busy, and often, no matter how much time they want to give, they haven't got that time. So my get out of jail card has always been the free service that we offer. And what we've just done now is we're sending out free to vet practices a sympathy card that, and on the back of it gives all the information for their client about contacting our service. We have the time.
So I just wanted to pick up on something you said earlier when you talked about the specific type of emotions and grief that you have as a pet owner. And one thing that I keep coming back to for my frame of reference as a vet is, people having to make the decision of when to put their pet to sleep, which is a very unique thing in the relationship between a pet and their owner, because you don't get that with a relative in the human world. And actually what that often comes with in my experience is this huge kind of tag of guilt, where people feel guilt. And I've just gone through this very recently with a very good friend of mine, where the guilt lies in, oh, I don't want to make a decision too early. And I don't want to leave it too late. But actually, that mixed in with that uncertainty, the guilt was just building and building. It was turning into anxiety and stress, and it was really clouding that whole experience, which is, like from your perspective, like you said there, you should really be focusing on that bucket list and doing all the things that are positive. And I'm not saying that didn't happen, that absolutely did in this example, but at the expense of, my friend's kind of well-being, really, of how much of a burden that guilt was. How do you propose that people can cope with that? It's a very real thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a huge thing, and particularly when I said we talked about the grief cycle for pets, guilt is massive. And like you say, we often hear about, was it too soon? Was it too late? Could I have had a second opinion? The blame culture comes out as well, where they start to blame the vet or the vet nurse or the receptionist because they feel that they didn't do enough. And we often see then people's anger come out as well. And what we really think is that communication is key. You know, you're never going to take away all that anxiety or guilt, but it's really, really important that you communicate clearly to the client about what's going to happen. Now, they'll go through a heightened state of awareness. They will only hear certain things, and it's usually the bad things or the things they don't want to hear will be blocked out. So it's really important if they can take somebody with them so that person can then go over the things that were discussed. If they can also be given all the information that is available, because I know time is of the essence, but it could be information about the treatment, information about after death body care, paperwork signing, things that people find. It just becomes a blur, so that afterwards the guilt hits in because they've missed a lot of the factual things they've been told. You know, it's really, really is difficult. And it is one thing that nothing else I've ever worked with, because I work with human loss and animal loss. Animal loss, the guilt factor is huge. But it is really important that, you know, we just go over, and almost to the point of when I train people, I say to them, when you've gone through it once, clarify their understanding for that extra few minutes at the end, go back over the important points, give them time. Because often we hear, they told me I needed to have my animal put to sleep and it was done before I had time to think. Give them time and space. There's nothing, you know, it's, as long as the animal's not in pain and suffering, then it's good time to let them have as much time as they can, either at that end or take them away and come back if it's not going to struggle or suffer.
That's really good advice. So I'm continually impressed, especially through those stories that you're telling us about the amazing work that your volunteers do and how much of an impact they're making on people's lives. But my question is, how it must be hard, you know, being in the midst of all these kind of situations and conversations. And I know that there is a very real thing in the veterinary profession at the moment called compassion fatigue, where, you know, where you are really putting everything into supporting people and really trying to help them. So how do you prepare your volunteers for this kind of work?
We are very thorough that making sure that we're right for them and they're right for us in the first instance, almost to the point of people think they can start instantaneously with us, but it has to be right both sides, because it is very emotional and it is very, you know, intense on people, the type of calls and the work they do. We then have a really intensive interview that they go through and a written scenario, because it's important that they understand and they've suffered the loss of a pet to have the understanding. We then have really comprehensive training, and I mean comprehensive, where it takes up to 3 months for them to learn everything and go through it. And it hasn't stopped yet. We then put them through practice calls, practice emails, practice web chats, so that they feel right and ready to handle it. But we also have a huge backup system whereby we review, we train, we refresh, we have regular meetups so that they are fully supported, because the roles are remote. So it's vital they get mentors allocated to them so that if they have anything that's difficult, they can contact them. And most importantly, we behind the scenes are there for them. Every hour that the line is open, we're there to support. If they do get difficult calls, which they do all the time, we also have something we call timeout. And this is the person themselves, because they're volunteering their service to us out of the kindness of their heart. If they want, because they've suffered a life-changing event or they're going through anything in their personal lives or a call's affected them, they can take shifts out to weeks out. And they, or 9 times out of 10, they will return. If they need a bit of refresher training, they come back. But the support is immense. I have to tell you, I am immensely proud of every single one. Our eldest is 86 and been with us 26 years. And we have a really beautiful range of people and age group. And they are, I'm just, well, blown away by their commitment. They are there every day of the year, always.
Now, you sound like a proud mum.
You know, I am. I can't tell you enough. I gushed, because every single one of them I am immensely proud of.
Oh, that's lovely to hear. And it's amazing to hear the amount of support that you give them for what is absolutely vital, but also very challenging and difficult work. In terms of volunteers then, you said you talked through the process to prepare them, but what kind of people are you looking for in the first place?
Most important thing is that they are people who can be empathetic, compassionate and listen, that they've sadly gone through the loss of a pet. It doesn't necessarily have to be a bereavement, but it can be lost or stolen. So they've experienced a loss. Male, female, anybody over the age of 18 up to the age of 105 would be fine. If they're willing, we're willing. It's home-based. So when I talk about diversity, I have people who, you know, for example, I have an amazing lady who sadly is unable to see. She is absolutely brilliant. We trained her because there are ways that we can adapt our training. So it can be anybody at all. I am desperate, and this can sound terrible, for more men, because we have a wonderful team here who would support you, but I would love some more men of all ages.
I just hope there's not a 106-year-old person sat there just feeling that they were going to pick up the phone to volunteer, and they're not now because you put the cut off at 105. Yep.
120, you're fine, you're fine.
Okay, so can you tell us about some of the people that volunteer for you, their backgrounds, their motivations, their stories? Who are these people? Tell us about them.
Gosh. They come from all ranges of backgrounds. I have a lady who does acting and opera singing, and she does a wonderful job with us. She also works for a lot of our guys tend to work for Samaritans and Crews occasionally as well, because it tends to be the same sort of work. I have my eldest lady, like I said, who's 86. She also does Samaritans on Christmas Day, been with us 26 years. She is phenomenal. I have ex-vets, veterinary nurses, mental health people who work in crisis teams or mental health nurses. You name it, we have it. We have veterinary students. There are house mums. There are dads who've retired. There are anybody. And they are phenomenal people. They do it because often they've experienced it, and a lot of the times they've used our service. And what we really, really want is we want more people to know we're there, you know, to understand that as a service, we're there to support, to listen. There is no stigma at all about ringing a helpline. And that leads me on to, because I haven't stopped talking, we also support a lot of other animal charities whereby they have support animals that sadly, maybe they have to retire or at the end of life. And that's a huge loss, because it's not only their working pet, it's the pet that they love as well.
You're so passionate about the people that work with you, Di. And I think it really, you know, demonstrates how much of an inspiration that you must be to them as well, to because you're so passionate about the service. My question is, if the sky was the limit for this service, what would you do with it? Where would you take it?
Oh my gosh, how long have we got? Money were no object, because it always comes down to money, sadly. I would like to have a service whereby we can go the next level and offer virtual face-to-face counselling, because I believe that that's something that, you know, people can't afford out there, and we could definitely do. So I think that would be my next element. I would like a texting service, which we could send people, not blanket text, but individually done for them. That again, and also, gosh, there's language services out there that I would like to employ. So the world would be my limit, you know, sky's the limit. I could.
So for people listening to this, Di, where would they go for more information about the Pet Bereavement Service?
Right. If you'd like to ring, it's 0800 096 6606. If you'd like to email, it's pbssmail@bluecross.org.uk. But if you can't remember any of this, go to the Blue Cross website. You will find all the information about how to contact us. We also have a page on there that will show you how to get through to the website, how to get through to the email, and there's a landing page on there as well as our Facebook, and also lots of information, free information on pet loss.
I'd just like to say a huge thank you to Diane James and her team at the Blue Cross, who are doing such fantastic work in this area. If you are struggling to cope with the loss of your pet, then please do contact the Blue Cross Pet Bereavement Support Service. It's a really, really fantastic service, and I can't recommend it enough. You can contact them on 0800 096 6606, email them on pbssmail@bluecross.org.uk, or visit the Blue Cross website for more information. I just wanted to take a moment to mention Home Goodbye, a calm and compassionate home euthanasia service for pet owners in London. A home euthanasia allows your pet to pass in the peaceful and familiar surroundings of their own home. To arrange a home euthanasia, then call the Home Goodbye support team on 0208 057 0000 or email contact@homegoodbye.co.uk.
You've been listening to The Consult Room. I really hope you've enjoyed today's show. Please do subscribe, follow, or share this podcast. I'd love to hear your feedback. If you want to get in touch or collaborate, then do reach out to us at theconsultroom.co.uk or connect with me on social media as Dr. Paul the Vet or Dr. Paul Magtalone.